Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. In-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit DXEngineering.com/HamNation. And by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. And by Ting.com. Ting is a mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting. Pay only for what you use. Ting doesn't require a contract and offers unlimited devices on one shared plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit hamnation.ting.com. That's hamnation.ting.com.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 134, for February the 12th, 2014. Station Grounding. Hello, everybody. This is K9EID, and you are watching Ham Nation here on the Twit Network. And we have a whole bunch of things, as usual. And I'm in my Illinois location tonight, so I don't have a bunch of gear behind me. But we'll see how that all works out. And, of course, we have our normal players with us. Gordo is here. Gordo, how are you doing tonight in Costa Mesa? Are you doing well?
We're okay, and Golf 4, November Lima Alpha. His name is G. He's in the U.K., and he says all of the U.K. is watching. And February 15th, you know, it's freezing acorns in Portage, Ohio, the 9th annual February 15th Hamfest. Kentucky has theirs on March 1, says K1 Echo Golf. And we're sad to report that the WI7YN, that's Mark Noel of the Bay Area HRO. His memorial is also going to be on March 1. And, of course, we're mourning the loss of Sierra One Mike Oscar, nicknamed Simo. Thanks for your love, Simo. Bob, back to you.
All right, Gordo. Yeah, we want to start featuring some of the Hamfest because it's coming up that time. Not that we don't have any in the winter, but there's a lot more in the spring and so on. And how are you doing in cold Mississippi, George? You okay?
Yeah, doing good, Bob. Speaking of freezing nuts, I'm one of them here. It has been really cold again. We've had winter storm warnings for the last two nights. Finally, the precipitation stopped, but the roads are kind of iced over now. The Mississippi River Bridge got shut down most of the day today at Vicksburg, so people had to travel way around to cross over that river if they needed to get to the other side. But other than cold, we're having fun.
Well, that's great. We're cold here in the St. Louis area, that's for sure. But they're telling us it's going to be 60 in a week. Well, yeah, we'll see. Don, how are you doing down there? Is it a little bit warmer for you? I bet it is.
Considerably, yeah. No frozen precip down here. We're about 60 miles north-northeast of New Orleans. So what is it, right? It's 39 right now, just a kind of a cold, dreary rain the last couple of days. We're going to be in the 50s tomorrow, and I understand in the 60s to near 70 by Friday, which will be good. I've got a couple of things to mention real quick, if you don't mind. I recorded a thing tonight for the WIA News in Australia, so I'm going to be on that, one a little club thing. But also, the school roundup is going on right now on HF. If you want to talk to some kids and some of the youth in amateur radio, there are a couple of Young Ham of the Year Award winners that are on there, as a matter of fact. The 2013 current Young Ham of the Award winner, Patrick Lissandre, KC9UUS, he and his club is on there as well. And also, Andrew Koenig, KE5GDB, who was the 2009 Young Ham of the Year. He's been active in the school roundup as well. So nice to have the youth in amateur radio. But something else I want to mention. One of our own deserves to have his horn tooted a little bit. Bob Heil, you know, he's got the Hammond organ thing going on and has been for, well, you see that picture out there, 1961. Bob, you have been named to the Hammond Organ Hall of Fame. Tell us a little bit about this. I mean, that's, man, congratulations on that. Wow.
Thank you.
Tell us how that came about.
Well, back in 1959, I actually worked the NAMM shows for a couple of years for Hammond. I was their demonstrator, this young 19-year-old kid that would come and play the Hammond organ in their for their shows and stuff. And, of course, I've been playing all my life, and it's part of the reason that I can listen so well is voicing and tuning pipe organs and things like that over my lifetime. But the president of Hammond Organ came to our NAMM booth, and he invited me over to their booth. He said, "We have a new, brand-new organ. It's an A100, which is a home organ, like a B3, but you don't have to have all the speakers." So I went over and played that organ and commanded quite a crowd, because a lot of people in the music industry the rock and roll industry don't know that I play the organ. So that's how it all came about. And I'm incredibly honored, because we're talking about the top level players, Joey DeFrancesco and Jimmy Smith and all these guys. But I'm a theater organist, and there's not very many of us in the Hall of Fame. There I was. I was 12.
What a cutie.
Yes, I was 12. And thank you very much, Don. There I was. That was about, I think I was 18 there. That's when I was working for Hammond Organ, doing their demos and promos and all of that. That was done last year at Miami, Oklahoma. They have a wonderful Wurlitzer there in the Coleman Theater, and I'll be there in a few weeks. There I was at the booth playing away and not knowing why they had me play, because they were taking a bunch of other pictures, and I guess they voted. I don't know, but I was so blessed when they sent this to me last week. So, yeah, thanks very much, Don. And
congratulations. Congratulations, Bob. That's
so
awesome.
I guess that's three Hall of Fames, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the Hammond Organ, and the CQ years ago. I think, Gordo, you're in that Hall of Fame, too, of CQ, aren't you?
We are. And as you know, CQ Magazine is going digital with Popcom, as well as World Radio, as well as CQ VHF. The CQ print issue will remain in print, but the digital will include everything. So it's sort of a new move for the team at CQ.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thanks a lot, Don. I appreciate that very much. And
hey, weren't you guys the Dayton Amateur of the Year as well? I know Gordon was, and I think you were too at one time, huh, Bob?
Yeah, I got a 1982. It was a couple of years after K7 UGA got the award. That was another incredibly honorable award, as Gordon will attest. It's really something for that award. And what year were you Ham of the Year at Dayton, Gordon?
Gosh, maybe about 7 years ago, and it was quite an honor. We always can't wait for the Dayton Ham Mention coming up in May.
And of course, George honored last year. George was honored last year, not as Ham of the Year, but quite an honor last year from Dayton as well. So you guys, I'm just honored to be in your company, in your shadow.
Well, you forgot one important guy, and that's Bill Pasternak, who his vision of bringing news to amateur radio has been there for, 30-some years?
And 35 years and counting, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was Ham of the Year. That's great, and we appreciate all that. We still have fun. That's the main thing. We still have fun. Well, we'll be back to you guys in just a minute. I want to bring up a subject here in a couple of minutes, I have just been bombarded, by the way, is the name of the third manual on a Wurlitzer pipe organ. I've been bombarded with emails and phone calls lately about grounding. It is a subject that a lot of people talk about, and very few understand it, me probably being one of them. But I got a little thing that when I do workshops in the audio world for a lot of colleges and all of that, one of the things that I do is I show them this. And let's see if you can follow along here. You see up in the corner how if you connect, let me get this all together, hard to do without a boom. If you connect all of your things together, now we're talking about your transceiver. You plug the coax into the transmitter output. You plug it, of course, into the wall socket. And you end up there with that third pin ground that goes in there and everything's grounded. However, you have created a tremendous ground loop. And here's what happens. See if I can get over here and let you really understand this. Here's the deal. When you have any kind of measurement equipment, you see, let's take this ground, for instance. If we go this way, down to the fuse box and down to ground, I'm sorry I can't do this a little better, but we have one path to ground. Well, we also have another path to ground the other direction. Well, those are different links. And what happens is you get a huge ground loop when you do that because you've got two different lines to ground and they're different links. Well, what really infuriates me is the guys that say, oh, we put a ground strap here and where's this going to ground everything and everything and ground and ground and ground. Well, you're just creating ground loops, just ridiculous. It's looking for ground. Well, it's going to go this way. It's going to go this way. It's going to go that way. You have created many ground loops. How can you prevent it? Well, first of all, and this goes, I mean, we're going to do a whole sequence on this with our friend Steve Katz here. He's really written a great thing about this, but get one of these little guys like this. You've seen these things. They're ground lifts. And when you plug your transceiver and your power supplies in, and that third pin ground, that third pin goes to ground, you have just caused yourself all kinds of problems with RFI, hum, and everything else. Break the ground. Now, you got to be careful. It's got to be grounded. I didn't say ungrounded. But notice here, when you break that ground, you only have one path to real earth ground down at the bottom in the fuse box. You want one path to ground. You don't want five or six different paths to ground like we have up here, all kinds of them. And then what's even worse is you connect your coax to the transceiver, you ground your tower, and you have another ground and another path to ground. So what you do there, you use transformers. We call them balans, not balums. I hear that on the air. It's balanced to unbalanced. It's B-A-L-U-N, not U-M. Sorry, it's just my little personal. Hate that. Balun. You put a balun everywhere so that there's a transformer, so to speak, and we don't have the antenna that has the coax to one side. We don't have that antenna coupled to the ground at the tower. It's uncoupled with that balun. So the only path that you can have to ground in your station is right there. You unground the amplifier or the transceiver. You have to be able to assure yourself that it's grounded one direction. And the easiest way that I find to do that are these little guys right here. Put that on a power supply or put it on the transceiver and it solves it. You would be amazed. And I'm going to have an actual demonstration of that when we get into this grounding. I think Brian's got a copy on the bottom here of Steve's EHAM article. And you really want to take time to look this up. It should be question number 3 in the question pool. Just look up EHAM articles. And you'll look up her grounding, or Steve Katz, K-A-T-Z. I'm telling you, you will learn a lot. He's really done this right. There it is, right there, station grounding under articles. And I'm telling you, some of the best information that I can give you is to go look at all of this grounding situation, because too many people spend too much time on grounding, and it's really pretty simple, but it can be real awful because of RFI and hums and all that. George, you agree with all this, I bet you, don't you?
I agree that there are a lot of opinions out there on grounding. And yeah, we We've used a lot of those little three-prong adapters there for guitar amplifiers in years past to get around problems with guys shocking themselves when they got too close to the microphone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll talk about it more, but I want all of you to go find Steve's article. Just put it in the search box up on the articles section of EM. You'll see them, and it's really good. So that's my little treatise for today, because I have a lot of people that have written me, called me, and I try to answer all the emails, and some of them sometimes are hundreds a day, but that's okay. That's what I'm supposed to do. That's what Sarah says. She owns and runs, and the president of the company says, you just answer all these emails and invent stuff. So that's what I do. Well, Gordo, you got some really great information that I think we need to share. So let's move out to Costa Mesa and have at it.
All right. Thanks, Bob. And, you know, we're going to be talking about the General Radio Operator's License. This is the book that Don was poring over last week. And let me show you what the GROL license can lead to. So, Brian, if you don't mind, let's go ahead and roll the shots. First of all, the commercial GROL is rules and regs as well as theory. And as you can see here, the theory for the commercial is the same, nearly the same as extra class. So if you've got extra class, this book will take you through a lot of formulas you already know. The GROL is the license that allows you to work on commercial equipment aboard boats as well as aircraft. And it's also a great way to get a job in the land mobile industry, because while the FCC doesn't require the GROL, it's great on your resume. So think about, especially you extra class operators, as getting the GROL license. Now, the neat thing about GROL is if you live next to a seaport, you can do small passenger vessel inspections, like these little towboats that ferry folks around the harbor, or the showboats that take them around the bay and show all the sights, show all the movie star homes on the bay, including inland bays, including amphibians. This one drove to my house for their inspection. And sometimes you get little boats, and sometimes you get huge ones like this 98-ton Catalina Flyer. The inspections earn you $75 an hour minimum, 2 to 3 hours, especially on a vessel this size. Now, what they're looking for every 5 years to satisfy the Coast Guard is this signed certificate of the Communications Act Safety Radio Telephony Certificate. And that's the one that you issue after you follow the guidelines on checking out their radios on board. Now, most of these small passenger vessels don't require extensive radio test gear. As you can see by the gear here, this is stuff that you've probably already got. Here's a slug for the 1 to 250 meg band for checking out marine VHF. And if you don't want to have a big bird watt meter, you can get a lightweight one from one of the manufacturers. You're looking for both power out as well as SWR. MFJ makes this great deviation meter, and a little tweaking, and you can get it to work on the 156 megahertz band. Or if you go way back to we do, Optoelectronics still has some of these deviation meters around. We're measuring frequency stability of the VHF radios. You can do that with an MFJ frequency counter. And we're looking at voltage. You can do that with any kind of a good digital voltmeter. And many times we're transmitting for 10 minutes to see that the voltage maintains and the radio doesn't blow up. We do that on, of course, a good old watt meter. And another marine VHF to let you listen to the audio. And, of course, sometimes we're having to clip some of the ties in the back of the gear to get at it. So you want to bring along more of the cable ties, black tape, and your snippers to be able to do the job. So you head down to the marina. They've asked you to come down and perform a small vessel inspection. You got to look the part. So wear the right clothes, have the right bag carrying all your stuff and the checklist. Pastor Jason, who works with me, W6AUX, if he's aboard a real small boat, good thought here, brings along his PFD. And so you got to look sharp for these vessels, because some of them are luxurious. And you got to wear the right deck shoes on some of the really nice decks aboard those vessels. First thing, get familiar with the panels and learn what turns on the radios. Then you're going to seek out the Marine VHF radio that you see bottom left. You're going to check that it has the radio identification called the Maritime Mobile Service Identity Number. Remember, you're on the clock at $75. You test with the local Coast Guard, and many of the Coast Guard areas have tests. You make sure the GPS is tied into the VHF. This is almost like a 2-meter setup, but it's at 156 megahertz. Here you need to check out the VHF antenna. Some of them require a little bit of climbing around to check out the antenna, but you can do it down below with an SWR analyzer. Field strength meter to make sure we don't have any losses of signals. You're looking at the cable to make sure that it's not cracked or corroded. Because remember, you're going to have to specify to the FCC and Coast Guard that this is a sound installation. So you've really got to take a close look, as we are here, of the antennas. Then we look in the back and we see a kludge like this, where two radios go to one antenna. One radio has a dead receiver. I wonder why. Never have a T in the line. Some installations, you go to look and see where the wires go. Oh, my gosh, no wonder that won't pass inspection. Sometimes you inspect their handheld radios and you got water on the inside. That won't make it. And you never know. Sometimes you get a splitter that splits out AM, FM radio for these tour boats with their VHF antenna. Look at this. What a pile of junk just to get FM reception off of your VHF communications rig. Nice. Power supply reserve of energy is what we check. Good battery selection there. You want to look at voltage on transmit. And again, this is all easy stuff. Sometimes you're working with connectors to make sure they're hooked up to the GPS set. And never, ever push this button. That's the actual distress button. But in an emergency, the radios that you're checking at $75 an hour for 2 or 3 hours, you want to make sure that when they press the button, the Coast Guard is going to get the immediate alert. The local harbor patrol are going to get an immediate alert. And if your clients have to bail out in the water, now they make submersible marine VHFs at 156 megahertz, very close to our 146 megahertz ham band. And here you see some survivors that were able to get help because you checked out their radio and it survived. And so did the survivors. We're also checking emergency position indicating radio beacons, EPIRBs. What we look for during our small passenger vessel inspection is to make sure that the battery has not expired on those EPIRBs. For those vessels that cruise beyond local site of land, they may require for Sea Area A2 a medium and high-frequency radio. So you're dealing with just almost like a ham set, high-frequency. You're looking at all the frequencies, such as all the way down to 2 megahertz and as high as 26 megahertz. And that way, if that vessel should all of a sudden catch fire, they're going to be able to press one button and immediately get back to the United States Coast Guard. So we encourage all of you, if you're thinking about getting a lucrative job in marine electronics or even commercial electronics, if you're not near the water, get the GROL book. And I know the writer, that's me, and you can get that through DX Engineering or direct from the W5YI group or many of the ham radio stores throughout the country. But this book that Don was showing you, all the questions and answers, and when you go for the technical theory, it's going to look a lot like extra class. In fact, about 60% of the questions in the commercial marine radio telephone license, GROL, are straight out of the extra book. So, Bob, that's my deal, and we encourage all of you that if you're looking for a way to get aboard a electronics company, get the commercial GROL license, element 1, 24 multiple choice questions on the rules and regs, and element 3, that's the technical side, 100 questions, and only need to get 75% on each one to pass with flying colors. So, Bob, back to you. That's the commercial radio telephone license.
That's great, Gordo. We should have a whole program on how ham radio can build careers.
Oh, yeah.
It's it's amazing, isn't it, how many broadcast engineers and just every little thing you don't think about sometime, the jobs are there because of amateur radio. I'm probably one of the good flag wavers there. I know George is, and Don, you've certainly done some work in that field too. So there you go. Well, we want to go talk about DX Engineering. We're very proud to have DX Engineering here on the show with us. So let's go see what the deal of the day is with DX Engineering.
Yeah, they've got all kinds of cool stuff at DX Engineering. You got to get the catalog because not only can you get, you know, connectors and coax and stuff, but like we were saying, you can get the book, Gordon's book there, and look, they even have the book and the software package. Look at this, in the book and the software in the same box. So, yeah, well, Gordon will hook you up with all kinds of knowledge, practical knowledge. But let's talk about Comtech. Comtech and DX Engineering, you might recognize the Comtech name because they've got an amazing reputation for designing and building high-performance vertical arrays and accessories. For years, the Sirius DXers have absolutely trusted Comtech for antennas, balun, switches, controllers, and more. They relied on them, and every Comtech product can be found online right there, dxengineering.com. For instance, the four-square switch relay unit. It's state-of-the-art design. We'll give you the most advanced antenna system possible. It's affordable, simple to install, easy to use. Seven monoband designs cover the most significant HF bands, and they are custom tailored to each band, so you know they're going to work the absolute best. Optimum performance, that's what Comtech's all about. The four square switch relay unit works best when used, obviously, with the Comtech and DX Engineering components. They've got the four square control console that maximizes the array's potential, and the DX Engineering coaxial feed system absolutely perfectly suited to these four square setups. And they will handle full legal limit with a 100% safety factor, and that's important. They're also very well protected against the elements. They handle all the rigors of outdoor use, and their enclosure is an integrated mounting bracket as well for easy installation. Now, the baluns, we talked about baluns, and yes, with an N and not an M, as Bob said. Comtech studied Jerry Sevick's research on baluns and ununs. That's unbalanced, if you don't know that. As an inspiration to create a line of superior baluns, they offer the perfect combination of value, ruggedness, and performance. A superb match between the unbalanced coax cable and the balanced antennas is what this is all about. Low impact on power performance, a negligible 0.2 of a dB insertion loss. That's like hardly nothing. Comtech baluns offer superior SWR across the HF band, super common mode impedance across the HF spectrum, and they love being outside. They're sealed in a weatherproof box. They use stainless steel hardware. Gasketed SO239 connectors help improve the durability. Well-suited for HF applications. You can get them at a 1-to-1 or a 4-to-1 ratio with single or dual cores, depending on your application. They'll handle legal limit with a large safety factor. And proper balun selection can be complicated. That's why you need this DX Engineering catalog, because it's not just a list of parts and prices. They go in and they absolutely help you decide just exactly what you need. And you can also call DX Engineering, get advice as well. If you want to grab any of the gear, get your order in by 10 p.m. Eastern. If it's in stock, DX Engineering will put it on a truck headed your way tonight. Proven products, expert advice, the fastest shipping in the industry. DX Engineering helping you shrink the globe. Get your catalog or shop online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at dxengineering.com/hamnation. Go. Enjoy it. And be DXified. George, what's... I don't know where I'm going.
DXified.
My entire mind now.
Hey, Gordon, I got this back in 85. Is it still any good?
It is wonderful. That's an original, probably signed by Marconi himself, George.
Yeah, it was a renewal. You know, you used to have to renew them every few years, but now they're lifetime. So that's good. I don't have to do that again. But, that's a good exam to take. If you've already gone through all the amateur exams, check out your general radio operator's license. You know, that, like Gordo says, you could pick up some extra change with that or even start a career. Well, this week in Smoke and Solder, you know, I was just doing something myself. So that's what we're going to look at. Some weeks I'll do a special project just for you guys. Other weeks, it's whatever George has been up to, and that's what it is this week, what George has been up to.
right.
For the last several weeks on Smoke and Solder, we've been talking about transmission lines and connectors. This week, we're going to do something a little bit similar. Not exactly the same, though, but something most of you probably use, and that is the F connector. This is used for cable television, television antennas, satellite, and a number of purposes like that. Now, these things have been around for a good while. The first ones look like this. It's just a little connector and a collet that goes around the outside. You take your RG59 or RG6 in this case. You pull the shield back. You slide the wire up inside the connector. Pull the shield back down over the pin there in the middle. And then you slide your collet over it. And you use a crimping tool to crimp that down. Now, these worked, but they really didn't look that nice and probably weren't the strongest connectors around. They improved them just a little bit, depending on how you look at it. This is a more modern version. The collet is already made onto the connector. You do essentially the same thing, but now you've got to get the shield over the center pin as well as inside the ring here. A little bit more challenge, but not impossible. Now, it's kind of hard to press that up in there sometimes, so you might want a precision tool to help you with, like this stick of wood with a hole drilled in it. Then you can put your connector over there and push it down without bending the wire when it comes out. One other type that they recently came up with is the screw-on type, where you'd take your shield and you'd fold it back over the outer here, trim down your insulation in the center, and then you'd screw this on. And those work okay, too. Now, I've seen cable TV companies use these compression connectors, but I didn't know exactly how they worked. These are supposed to be weather-resistant, and they're very hard to pull off of there. I had occasion recently to put on some F connectors, and I decided I would go with these a little better connectors. You have to have a special compression tool to put these on. They don't use a crimper. But let's just install one of them and look at how that works. Here's the old crimp on one. You can see I got it on there, but I really don't like the way that it looks, and it pulls off pretty easy. To prepare this one, the first thing we'll do is strip off some of the insulation, the shield, and the center dielectric, and get it down to where we've just got the center conductor sticking out. I like to use a razor blade knife for this because it cuts through all of that pretty good. Just be careful when you're doing it. And be careful that you don't go so far in that you nick the center conductor, because it will break easily if you bend it once that's been done. There we go. Now we need to expose 1/4 inch of the shield here. And to do that, I'm not going to use a razor blade, but a little bit duller utility knife. I'm going to guess that's about 1/4 inch. We'll cut it kind of lightly so we don't nick that shield in there. And I'll use some wire strippers to pull that off. Now we take the shield and we fold it back over the insulation. You also want to look to be sure that nothing is touching across the dielectric to the center conductor here. Once you've got that done, you slide the connector up on. And I'll look here in the center. And we want to push it to where we just see the dielectric kind of line up with the center inside there. And now we'll use our compression tool. And the way this thing works is you stick the connector up in the end of it and sit it down just like this. And when you squeeze it, it's going to push the end of the connector on up over the rest of it. Now, we'll have to kind of hold pressure on this wire because it will try to slide the wire back out when we do this. a good-looking, solid F connection there. And it is weather resistant. There's plastic insulation in here that got squeezed up around the outer jacket of the cable. We need to cut off the center here where it's just the same length as the ring around the outside. And there you go, cable TV grade F connector. And like I say, I had to replace some of those recently, and I had never used that type before, but I was glad I found them. They also make B and C connectors that are compression style, and my crimper won't do that, but I'm going to look for one in the future because those just seem to work real good. Well, last week I asked a question, why is it not a good idea to use PL259s for UHF? And I had a lucky winner here, that's John Donovan, N3JFD, and he said it's not a good idea to use PL259s on UHF because of the non-constant impedance. So congratulations, John. You're going to win this copy of Riding the Short Waves, Exploring the Magic of Amateur Radio by Don Keith. A great book about getting on HF, basically. It's aimed at anyone who's not an amateur or those that maybe got their technician license years ago, played around with VHF and UHF a little and then lost interest. So Don's book there is there to guide you and kind of let you see what the thrill of HF is all about, get you interested in the hobby again. For next week, I've got another question. What is the European, I would say, counterpart of the F connector? They have a connector over there they use instead of F connectors for cable television and such. What's the name of that? If you think you know, send your answer to me at hamnationcontest@gmail.com. And you could win some Heil wire. This is Bob Heil's custom microphone cable here. It's got the silver-plated braided shield here and two center conductors inside of there for your audio and two additional wires here that you can use for push-to-talk or for return audio for your headphones or whatever use you might have. And those are outside of the shield, so they're not going to interfere with your microphone cable. And it's in a good rubber jacket here. Very good cable. Highly recommended. Heil wire. So if you think you can win or know the answer to that, then send me your answer, and you could be next week's lucky winner. One other thing I wanted to mention is we just released episode 63 of Amateur Logic today. Had some interesting stuff in there. Tommy and I recently visited the Hamfest here in Jackson and got some good footage there. Some different things that you don't normally see in our Hamfest videos, so might want to take a look at that. Also, Tommy tells you how to secure your Raspberry Pi. Peter talks all about radio and the electromagnetic spectrum. I give some soldering tips. And the grand finale of that show is we had a guest appearance by the guys from Ham Dynasty. So you'll want to check that out. All right, I think it's time for the news now. So over to you, Don.
Well, so far, in a week of studying, Gordon, you'll be proud of me. I'm to the point now to where I can correctly spell G-R-O-L three out of five times. So I've discovered that so far it's a four-letter word, and so is news. So let's go ahead and get into the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline. Roll that right. Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 1904. These are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, February 12, 2014. As reported last week, Cuban hams will be getting limited access to 5 megahertz, but with more strings attached than originally thought. Here's Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
According to an update from Pavel Costa, CO7WT, and made public via the Southgate News, Cuba's Telecommunications Regulatory Agency has issued a clarification in response to questions submitted by Cuba's National Ham Radio Association, the FRC. In its reply, the regulatory body made it clear that the use of the 60-meter band is for emergencies and experimentation within that nation and only in communication with other Cuban hams. As such, no contacts are allowed with other countries until further notice. As to the process by which hams in Cuba will be licensed to operate on 5 megahertz, the regulator said that the amateur radio community will have to wait until the regulatory body creates the procedures for this license upgrade, and this could take some time.
Yaesu and the Caribbean Amateur Radio Group have joined together in supporting the Arecibo Observatory Amateur Radio Club station KP4AO. During a recent visit to the station, Yaesu's Executive Vice President for North American Sales, Dennis Machenbacher, K7BV, presented the group with an FTDX 1200 transceiver for use at its new visitor center station. Again, Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
According to club president Angel Vasquez, WP3R, the club is establishing the new station in the exhibition hall of the Angel Ramos Visitor Center located at the observatory. Construction of the station is expected to be completed in about 3 months. The Arecibo Observatory, which is the home of the world's largest radio telescope, was completed in 1963. It recently celebrated its 50th anniversary, during which the KP4AO group hosted a special event station as a part of that celebration.
The winter 2014 edition of the 5 MHz newsletter is now available for download. In addition to the latest 60-meter news, there's also an article titled The Supremacy of 5 MHz as a Communication Bridge, a feature on the new South African ZS6KTS beacon, plus items on digital voice and the latest worldwide 5 MHz amateur allocations chart. You can find a link to the 5 MHz newsletter in PDF format in the print edition of this week's Amateur Radio Newsline report. Skeeter Nash has this week's names in the news.
First up is Oregon State Senator Betsy Johnson, KF7HHF, who recently presented Terry Wilson, KB7SI, an outstanding contribution award for his dedication to emergency communications. He was honored for his work in convincing numerous local residents to obtain their amateur radio licenses, including Johnson. He was also recognized for his work in keeping communications functioning during a severe storm back in December 2007. Carl Lutzelschwab, K9LA of Fort Wayne, Indiana, has been named the winner of the Bill Orr W6SAI Technical Writing Award for 2013. The ARRL Foundation Board of Directors selected Lutzelschwab for his article, The Sun and the Ionosphere, which appeared in the March 2013 issue of QST Magazine. K9LA had previously been awarded the March 2013 QST Cover Plaque Award for the same article.
And finally this week, three United Kingdom hams will be taking to internet television later this month with a new amateur radio-based video podcast program of their own. Here's Norm Seeley, KI7UP.
The new show is called The TX Vector. Its hosts are Bob McCready, G0FGX, Mike Marsh, G1IAR, and Nick Bennett, 2E0FGQ. All are broadcast professionals who say they plan to explore all aspects of amateur radio's fascinating hobby as the show progresses month to month. Episode 1, later this month, will visit the United Kingdom's Marconi Center. It will also spend time with the Norman Locklear Observatory Group, learning about how repeaters function, and also visit a mountaintop location to discuss the Summits on the Air project.
The TX Factor will be available free of charge to download beginning February 21st at www.txfactor.co.uk. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news brought to you each and every week for over 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And there you go. There's your news of the week. Let's go ahead and check out a word from another one of our fine sponsors, and that would be ICOM.
ICOM America and ICOM Canada are teaming up to offer ham radio operators some incredible savings. You can get a great deal on a D-Star repeater direct from ICOM and help expand D-Star across North America. For a limited time, ICOM is offering a buy direct D-Star promotion for U.S. and Canadian residents. Purchase a D-Star repeater through the D-Star Infrastructure Program. The growth of D-Star over the past 4 years has been incredible with the release of the ID51A and the IC7100. More people are getting on the air with this incredible mode. In response to the request to make the infrastructure more affordable, ICOM America and ICOM Canada are teaming up to expand the number of repeaters. Hurry, this buy direct promotion is good for a limited time. Download the mail order form, fill it out, and send it in by mail, fax, or email today. Find out what all the D-Star fun is about. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM's Buy Direct program.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation and throw your name in the hat for some great prizes from the icomswagstore.com. But not only that, they're giving away a radio each month. And the February grand prize is the ICOM IC-88D, a dual-band VHF UHF HT with 5 watts of power, D-Star digital voice, wideband receiver, and much more. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation and register to win today. And now let's go to Dale and see what's going on out in Kansas.
Well, thanks, George. Tonight, Show Me Your Shack plus 2 great videos from our Ham Nation viewers. First up, the Healthcare Community Amateur Radio Club. Their goal, ham radio in the hospital. J. Van Martin, W4JVM, tells us about the initiative he started in 2010. Let's watch.
KJ4KZ, the name is Jay. Juliet Victor.
In the age of Twitter and text messaging, the latest trend in healthcare communication is decidedly old school, ham radio. From a command post at UAB Hospital, J. Van Martin leads a drill for the Healthcare Community Amateur Radio Club. The volunteer group received a federal grant in 2010 to install high-tech radio gear in major Birmingham hospitals. Because their equipment is powered by backup generators, ham radio operators like Martin can keep communications flowing during a natural disaster, much like the tornadoes that devastated Alabama in April.
The Healthcare Community Amateur Radio Club is actually preparing for the same events that a normal amateur operator would prepare for if they use it as a hobby. But the Healthcare Community Club is focusing on hospitals and how proficient can we make our hospital environment in the event that we were to take a direct hit in Birmingham. There's many area hospitals in close proximity to UAB, and if we were to take a hit in the city and it dramatically affect communications, how do we communicate with each other, from EMS to ambulances to brims to regular old-fashioned, I want to pick up the phone and call and see is a particular hospital or UAB hospital full? So how do we get that communication? And ham radio is that vehicle.
Martin's club meets each month at UAB for training. He's eager to reach out to people who want to explore amateur radio.
The Healthcare Amateur Radio Club is actually open to anyone. We are encouraging, of course, ham operators to be a part of this club, and we've invited on area nets that amateur operators practice and communicate on, that we are open to all. But we're also open to the non-hams, the people who are not associated with any professional radio career or involved in any amateur radio at all. And some of the people that are showing up at our meetings are those saying, I just find this intriguing. What does amateur radio do? How does it impact weather? How does it impact natural disasters? And can I learn more? And that's what we're all about.
Well, thanks, J. Van. We are posting a detailed description of W4JVM's initiative, along with links to several newspaper and magazine articles about the club and its work in local hospitals in the Birmingham area. That'll be on hamnationvideos.info tonight, and do check it out. Additionally, the Healthcare Community Amateur Radio Club just launched a new website, and hcarc.org is our club website of the week. The webmaster for hcarc.org is Matthew Sheets, KB4MBS. J. Van Martin is president of the club. The site's packed with information about the club and their health initiatives in the Birmingham area. One example of the marriage of ham radio with healthcare took place at the UAB hospital during some recent winter weather. Just recently, they ran a 72-hour straight operation, supplied trained NCS operators at UAB for 72 hours.
Wow.
HCARC.org. Do check it out. Now let's jump right into this month's Show Me Your Shack. This is Show Me Your Shack, a compilation of shack photos received during late January and early February. Our first shack photo shows a nice setup put together by Sean McCaskey, KK6GMN. An extra-class operator, he uses a Kenwood TS-990S and a TS-2000. A Heil 781 microphone rounds out his equipment. KC9ZJF is next. Here are his son Ryan showing building their homemade copper J-pole. Here Ryan holds the J-pole while Mike runs tests on the ground before mounting the antenna on the roof above his home shack. Stephen Goldberg, W3SFG, shows his entire shack and the workbench.
Whoa.
Then a closer look at his operating position, which features an FT950 and an Amatron AL811. A Heil microphone and various computers and monitors round out his shack. This is the shack of Larry Peterson, WB9KMW. He uses a Kenwood TS590S and monitors SSTV on 14 230 megahertz 24 hours a day. He displays those images on www.wb9kmw.com. Here's his antenna farm. It includes a Force 12 Yagi at the top of his 50-foot AN wireless tower. Toby Robb, VK2TOB from Katooba in Australia, sent us this panorama shot of his shack. Here's the operating position of Tony Durant, M3OVA, of Lincoln, England. He uses an FT-1000P. Tony, who loves PSK-31, is shown here with his radio. Dan Van Evenhoven, N9LVS, who maintains the Ham Nation Wiki, operates in the shack at home part of the time with a Kenwood TS-450 and Amatron AL-811H. He also runs an APRS iGate with his Elinco 110T. For antennas, he uses a Mosley Classic 33 and a Diamond X300. But most of the time he's mobile. Here's his Jeep with an assortment of antennas. And here's the business end of the radio in that Jeep. Bob Robinson, N1TZU, sent us this nice photo of his shack. He operates a beautiful National NC-183D, a Heathkit DX-100, along with a Heath scope. It's a vintage radio at its best.
Wow.
Here's another panorama from down under. This one came from Peter Dawson. He's VK4VW with a nice photo of his shack. Here's the operating position at W2MGF. Mike Gianfrancisco in New York operates an FT-450 and a TS-2000, as well as an ICOM ID-50 D-Star radio. Michael Mish, KG2AF, sent in this photo of his modest shack featuring an FT-897D, an FMD-100 microphone, and a Heil ProSet 3 headset. He says that just about everything hides away out of sight except the giant map. For his HF antenna, he uses an MFJ 1786 magnetic loop antenna, and he has a few random wires. On VHF, he uses an open stub J-pole from Aero. N1XIO, Gerald Spurbeck's main check is in his 18-wheeler. Here's the gear just in front of the driver's seat. There's an FT-817ND along with an Elcraft T1 antenna tuner and a Heil Traveler headset. He uses a Heil foot switch so he can keep his hands on the wheel. When he operates from a motel, he uses this 29-foot end-fed antenna. And that's it. The latest Shaq photos from January and February. We'd like to show a photo or two of your ham shack on Ham Nation. To help us do that, make sure to send your shack photos to hamnationvideos at twit.tv. For guidelines, please do check out hamnationvideos.info. Keep those shack photos coming in, and we'll shoot for another compilation on March 5th or possibly March 12th. We'll wrap up tonight's video segment having fun with a 10-meter handy talkie. Larry Shantz, WD0AKX, edited this one especially for Ham Nation.
Hello, everyone, including Ham Nation viewers. I'd like to revisit a video I did in the past when I was talking on my 10-meter handheld to show you how much fun it can be talking long distance on 10 meters with a portable radio like this. Since this video clip you're about to see it was done, I've made many more contacts on this radio over time, including a contact to Mike WT6H, one of the Ham Nation post-show net controllers. So let's take a look at the clip.
Hello everyone, Larry, WD0AKX, and today I'm going to try to make a quick contact outside here with my Magnum 1012 portable handheld radio for 10 and 12 meters. And there are some signals on the band, so let's see if we can make a contact here on 10 meters today with this portable radio running 3 watts. Hello, CQ, 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 calling CQ10, CQ10, CQ10 meter phone from Whiskey Delta 0 Alpha Kilo X-ray, WD0AKX. M9V, this is WD0AKX. I can copy in there just fine, over. Okay, I'm still copying you fine. What is your location? Over. Copy, Space Coast, Florida. Very good.
Wow.
Well, I'm in Albert Lea, Minnesota, if you missed that. Albert Lea, Minnesota, in the southern part of the state here. And I'm just holding my handheld up in the air here. It's got about a 2.5-foot rubber duck antenna on it. Over.
Roger, roger. Know where you're at. Yeah.
Okay, go to 340. Is that QSL? There's a station nearly full scale right now on 29.020 on AM. I have talked to three or four AM stations so far with this radio, out on the West Coast mainly, California and that.
November 6, Romeo, India.
There's a contest going on here.
Wow.
Well, thanks, Larry. Keep those great videos coming, and hopefully we'll see you on 7278 here in a few minutes on the post-show net. Well, next week, exclusive coverage of two recent events. Kevin Young, KC7FPF, and a regular on the 40-meter post-show net, captured the feel of the Orlando Hamcation. And Angel Santana, WP3GW, covered the recent Puerto Rico ARRL convention. We hope to get his slides together for you this week, but just ran out of time. The Ham Nation video segment belongs to you, our viewer. Your videos are the reason the segment exists. So to get your video, just send us a link to it on an email to hamnationvideos@twit.tv. And that's a wrap for the video segment. Good night to all. Cheryl's up next with questions from the chat room and a look at upcoming ham events. But first, let's check out the latest from Ting.
interesting stuff. I love the ten-meter handy talking stuff. I remember when we showed that first time. That's cool stuff. All right, well, cell phones are everywhere. They're ubiquitous. We all have one. Some of us have several, more than we need, for sure. Well, there's no reason why you can't save some money, and that's what Ting is all about. Ting is an MVNO. That's a fancy way for saying they're a reseller of the nationwide Sprint network. And Ting is different. For instance, how are they different? Well, you can have unlimited devices on one plan. You'll share the pooled minutes, messages, and megabytes. And every device on your plan costs just a flat $6 a month. And the rates get even better. Even better. Ting has received better pricing from Sprint, and they're going to share the savings directly with you, the customer. Nothing fancy here, just better rates and lower monthly bills for all. If you've already tried Ting's savings calculator to see how much you could save with Ting, it might be worth doing another calculation to see how much more you could be saving. A friend of mine hit me up on Facebook 2 or 3 weeks ago and said, hey, I just went with Ting and I'm saving $150 a month. Can you imagine that? Saving $150 a month. Wow. And as always, Ting has no contracts. You pay only for what you use each month. That's your megabytes, your messages, and your minutes. And they're all billed separately. And that includes voicemail, caller ID, tethering, hotspot, three-way, call forwarding. All the other features, all part of the service. No add-on charges. And no contracts or early termination fees either. Truly and completely contract-free. They'll even give you credit if you're paying an early termination fee to come to Ting. They'll give you 25% credit of your ETF up to $75 per device just for coming to Ting. Go to ting.com/ETF for all the information on there. And Ting charges you for what you use, plus whatever taxes they're legally required to collect. No mumbo jumbo, no mysterious line items, no hidden charges, no recovery fees, none of that stuff. You take total control of your account, your usage, and your bills with a powerful online control panel. And should you need to actually talk to a human being, you can do that very easily. 1-855-TING-FTW. Think about that. Ting for the win. 1-855-TING-FTW. Anytime, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time, a real-life person will pick up the phone and help you out. And you can also do everything online at help.ting.com. With active customer support forums, a simple and powerful help ticketing system, video tutorials, video startup guides, and a whole lot more from Ting. Here's how it works. First, you purchase your mobile device from Ting. You'll get that in 2 to 5 business days. Or you can bring over your favorite Sprint phone to Ting. If you got an iPhone 4 or 4S, yeah, it'll work. As long as it's a Sprint phone, see the full list of eligible phones by going to the show's special URL and click on the BYOD link right at the top of the page. Ting will even help you turn your old device into cash to help with the move over to Ting. After you activate the device with Ting, you'll have the option to select a new phone number, or if you want to use your existing one, you can port it over. Ting will break out your rates by minutes, text messages, and megabytes to bill you at the end of the month for what you've used. Here's what you do. Go to hamnation.ting.com. Hamnation.ting.com. That's it right there. You'll save money. You'll better manage your mobile phone usage with Ting. Check out the savings calculator. You will see just how much you or your company can save. And because you're a Ham Nation viewer, they'll give you $25 off your first Ting device when you sign up. Hamnation.ting.com. It is as simple as that, and you can start saving today because everybody wants to save money on their mobile phones. And man, I tell you, with everything costing more and more, it seems like that's the definite way to go. Well, let's head up north to where it's, I'm sure, considerably colder than my 38 degrees here, and Cheryl with the chat room. How are you doing tonight, Cheryl?
I'm doing really great tonight, Don. How about you?
I'm awesome. I'm perfect. If I was any better, I'd just explode.
I know I'm better than I deserve, so. Right. Anyhow, blessed. today is February 12th, and I wanted to say hi to everybody in the chat room. Hi, folks. I just wanted to say it's 2 days before Valentine's Day, so I wanted to wish everybody a happy Valentine's Day first, and happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Oh,
and I bought it.
Hi, Gordo. So thank anyhow, you. I just wanted to dig into my email bag here, and it looks like, do we still have George online here? Is George dropped or is he here?
Right now, George isn't on, but I will have him on in just a moment.
Okay, then I will make him a second. But in the meantime, I'm going to move over to you, Gordo. And what we have here is NT9E. Dave said he wanted me to ask you, what's the latest version of the GROL and radar book? He says there's several different ones that he sees online. So can you say what the most recent one would be? Gordo, over to you.
Roger on that. Cheryl, good to see you. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you.
And it's the big one. We had a smaller book a few years ago, but it's just the latest book called the GROL plus, meaning plus radar. So if it's the big 8.5 by 11, that's the correct book, and they haven't made a change in the question pool for some time. So any one of the big editions will work just great.
Thank you, Gordo. And by the way, I've had the chance to see that book. It is awesome, and you can read it. I don't even need to bring out my glasses for that one. Real nice job on that book, Gordo. All right. And also, Gordo, here's one last one from KB3BYJ. Mike, he's been very patient from my last week glitch, whatever happened. I didn't get to see everybody. Sorry about that. I missed you guys, too. But here it is. Mike wants to know. He had a tree go down and it snapped his G5 RV antenna, and it took off about just an inch of a wire. And he says, if he were to solder it, would it affect it, or could he just rerun it without that inch and still tune it up? What do you think, Gordo?
Well, you know, I would think that if he lost just one inch out of either one end or the other of the G5 RV, it'll do just fine. And, to test just a little clip lead on the end that's maybe as long as what he lost, and we'll see what it looks like. And Cheryl, we realize it was like snowing, so we understand why you lost contact last week, and we're delighted that you're here this week. Happy Valentine's Day, Cheryl.
Thank you so much, Gordo. That's very sweet. And by the way, I just wanted to say, please remember to send all your announcements that you want made for your HamFest and beam them over to Gordo's email like he asked for in the beginning of the show. So I just wanted to make sure that we're getting them to the right place. So in the meantime, I'm going to move over to Bob. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
And happy Valentine's Day early to you too. And to the missus, aww, please.
Aww. Yes. Same to you.
Thank
just
you.
Just a few hours away.
Yeah, well, a day or so. And I have someone, KC8YQL, Bill. He says, hey, Bob, is it true that the ICOM 7100 has your element in the hand, Mike? Is that true?
No.
Not a true question?
Uh-uh.
Okay, well, one other thing that needs clarification, Jeff, N3VE, my wingman, he asks, Bob, are you going to need volunteers for the Dayton Ham Nation booth this year? He had such a great time last year, and he wanted to do it again. So where does he sign up, or what should he do?
Yes.
We haven't got that all together yet, but stay tuned. We'll have some information here in a few weeks. So just be aware that we're making that all happen, and we'll let you know right here on the show when we get ready to do that and where you can sign up. That'll be fun.
Yes.
So it's coming your way soon there, Jeff, and anybody else that'd be interested, oh, we'd love to have you. That's a great place to have a whole heck of a lot of fun there. So, and here comes another one for you, Bob, from KF5FEI, Bill. I had a second reminder because he had this question even last week, but once again, you know how that goes. He wanted to ask why the Heil headsets for the ICOMs come with the old style cable. And he seems to have to get a modular cable if needed. He just wanted to get a little bit more on the design of that. Can you expound on that for us?
Well, it doesn't come with the old style cable. It comes with the round 8-pin Foster plug, because the majority of ICOMs are used for that. But when you talk to your dealer, he can usually exchange it for you at the purchase. So that's not a big deal. And it's really difficult because some guys need one, some needs the other. We go nuts trying to make all of these different adapters.
Right.
It's
absolutely
crazy.
Don't you think? Know, I really thank you for that answer, Bob, because that clarifies a lot of things for a lot of people. And I know Bill just had that on his mind, and to hear it from you, nothing like it from Mr. Heil Sound himself. So thank you for the answer, Bob. Excellent. Super. And let's see. Gee whiz. I guess there is one last one here that I'm gonna give to you, Bob, here from KC9ZIT. If he has a 10-meter fan dipole going east and west, can he put another element going north and south on the same fan dipole? I think you understand that better than I do.
Yeah, absolutely. But you might get a really strange pattern. But you know what I always say on antennas? Try it. You're not going to hurt anything.
Right.
Try it. Don't be running a kilowatt into it to try it. Put 100 watts in it and see what you get.
Yeah.
But Hey, I have here at this Illinois home for years, I had up a fan dipole for 75 and 40. It worked great. But, yeah, give it a try. And I think you'll discover new horizons. You never know. It's ham radio. Mm-hmm. That's why they call us amateur radio.
Awesome. Great. Thank you. Well, I just wanted to invite everyone to tune in to the After Show QSO on 75 meters tonight. The frequency will be 3.847 megahertz as usual. And I wanted to ask you, Brian, did we get George back by chance?
We do. We got George on the line.
All right. Happy Valentine's Day to you early, George, since today's 2 days beforehand. Here's your question for tonight from Skeeter, N5ASH. He wants to know, what kind of solder flux do you prefer, brand, et cetera?
Yeah.
Over to you.
Well, a happy early Valentine's Day to you too, Cheryl. And I prefer a rosin type of solder flux. I can't reach it now. I know this question came up a few weeks ago, and I have the stuff on the desk, but we didn't do that question. You can get it in little boxes, you know, not very big. I've got Kester right now. I used to have some by GC Electronics. If you buy a can of that stuff, you'll probably never need to buy any more for the rest of your lifetime. I gave away a bunch of mine, just gobs of it to friends, and so I did end up buying another box. But that one will probably take me to the grave. And there's also those little liquid flux soldering pins. Those are pretty nice, too, and I use a Kester one of those. Just be sure when you're buying flux that you do not buy it at Lowe's or a plumbing supply and get acid core flux. That's a no-no.
Not the same thing, huh? Not the same
thing.
Not
at all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sure. There's so many little gotchas with electronic devices. They have to be just so, whether they're mil-spec plus or minus this much and everything else in between. That's just the way it goes. Well, I just wanted to say nice to be here tonight, and thanks for all your questions, and keep them coming. We love them. And, well, what do they say? That's a wrap. I'm Cheryl Essek, K9BIK. Until next time, I'll see you right here on Ham Nation.
Happy Valentine's Day.